Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Chirality, take 30.
1,000.
Yeah, I'm Chad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab, and today we are desperately seeking symmetry.
And thus far, we are failing
desperately.
Because maybe you know, if we rejiggered our whole approach, because symmetry, you know, is really about
love.
No, it's it's
what?
We're changing the subject now. Nah. It's about the way things look when they're flipped around or turned or rotated, and this is where it gets really interesting. Reflected.
Reflected.
Yes, reflected. Because there was a
reflected.
Yes, there was a mathematician at Oxford University named Charles Lutwidge Dodson.
There's a mathy name for you.
Well, he had a different name, as it happens.
What?
Lewis Carroll.
Oh, like the Alice in Wonderland dude.
The Alice in Wonderland dude.
He was a mathematician.
He was.
I really didn't know that.
Did you know that he wrote another book called Through the Looking Glass?
Truthfully, I didn't know they were different books.
You know very little in this particular section of our
program. I really don't.
But there's a part of the book where Alice is standing in her room talking to her cat.
Now, if you'll only attend, Kitty, and not talk so much, I'll tell you all about my ideas about Looking Glass House.
This is Natasha Gostwick reading, and in this section of the book, Alice is telling her cat, let's take a look at the difference between our world and that world right there in the mirror.
That's just the same as our drawing room, only the things go the other way. The books are something like our books, only the words go the wrong way. I know that because I've held up one of our books to the glass and then they hold up one in the other room. How would you like to live in a looking glass house, Kitty? I wonder if they give you milk in there. Perhaps looking glass milk isn't good to drink.
Perhaps mirror milk isn't good to drink, she says.
Why are you talking like that? What does that even mean?
Well, if you just stick with me on this, I think I will make it perfectly clear.
Okay.
This is a very, as it turns out, difficult exactly. scientific question.
Yes, they call it a chirality.
Okay, what?
Shh. This is Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil, N-E-I-L, deGrasse, small d-e, capital G-R-A-S-S-E, Tyson.
He's an astrophysicist with the American Museum of Natural History.
Also the director of the Hayden Planetarium.
Cool.
What is chirality?
Well, it's when you make a molecule, there's no rule or law that says it has to be symmetric.
Neil says if you zoom into that bowl of milk, what you're going to find is just chains of atoms that are stuck together in a very particular shape.
And that shape, it could curl in a particular way. So, for example, if you have a spring and you turn your finger in the direction the spring
goes. A spring like a coil.
A coil. Mm-hmm. But like the spring out of your click pen. Pull out that spring.
All right, we have a pen right here.
Under your pen. Pull it out.
I got the spring out. Here we go.
And look at the way the spring turns.
Looking at the spring.
And move your finger in the direction it turns.
Okay, moving my finger. It's turning clockwise. Clockwise. All the way up to the top.
Okay. That spring is that way. In its life.
Whether it's right side up or upside down.
Doesn't matter.
Always clockwise.
But if you had a mirror, Chad, do you happen to have something?
Do I have a mirror? No.
Or take your phone, which has a reflected shiny thing.
Okay.
Put your spring in front of the shiny surface of the phone.
Okay,
trace the spring with your finger and tell me which direction is your finger going.
Clockwise.
No.
We already did this.
In the reflection.
Oh, in the phone. It's kind of hard to tell, but in the phone. It's going the opposite way.
Yes.
Counterclockwise.
Exactly. And so now you have two oppositely turned springs. You cannot turn one into the other. They're built differently. yet they are curiously identical.
Yeah.
So, since molecules are just sequences of atoms, imagine a molecule that has that shape.
If you put that molecule in front of a mirror, just the same as the spring, you've got now two molecules built differently, but curiously identical. Kind of like your right hand and your left hand.
Your left hand and your right hand are related by a mirror image. It's the same thing with these molecules.
This is Marcelo Gleiser. He's a physicist
at Dartmouth College.
And according to Marcelo, this is how scientists talk about molecules. So they call them righties, they call them lefties.
Sometimes we call it handedness. Sometimes we get a little more fancy and we call it chirality, because chiro, kiros in Greek means hand.
And Marcelo says if you look at pebbles or granite or cement, inanimate stuff, when you look at the shape of things inside, it's a mixture of the two.
50% left-handed, 50% right-handed.
However,
if you look at all the proteins of living things, they're always left-handed and no right-handed at all.
Really?
Life has chosen one over the other. Life as we know it has
chosen. You mean when scientists look inside of living things, they always see it? The molecules are pointing one way?
Yeah.
Right. So somehow, and this is what's really amazing, somehow life is choosing a very specific shape for the molecules to make up stuff.
That's correct.
When you say life has chosen, let's take that sentence apart. Life meaning everything that is that we know of on Earth, every living thing.
Hence my phrase, life as we know it.
Everything.
That's what that means.
The littlest things to the blue whale.
That would be as we know it.
The littlest, tiniest thing to the tree, the biggest tree, the giant sequoia.
That would be as we know it.
Huh. Every protein in you, dogs, trees, you name it.
Is filled with left-handed building blocks?
Yes. It's called the chirality of life.
The chirality of life. Life, my friend, is left-handed.
That's pretty... Well, it feels cool, but let me just... so what? I mean, I don't want to put it bluntly, but I mean, like...
Well, other than the sheer surprise of having everything in life being shaped in one direction.
No, it is surprising, but I mean, what does it have to do with my life,
well, this brings,
anyone's life,
this brings
or
us
the mirror
back,
thing?
This brings us back to the mirror mystery in Alice and the Mirror Milk.
No, no. Because you just told me that the milk is left-handed, because milk is an organic thing.
I'm a living cow, yeah.
Remember you said that?
Mm-hmm.
Life is lefty.
Mm-hmm.
So there can't be any right-handed milk, so the mirror milk doesn't exist.
Well, that's because I forgot to tell you that scientists all the time manufacture mirror molecules.
They do?
Yeah. They go into their laboratories and they synthetically make mirror molecules of all kinds of things.
Can they do milk?
I don't know about milk in particular, but I do know that when I talked to an Oxford professor, Marcus de Satoy, he told me...
If you take the atoms which built caraway seeds...
Which is the spice they use in rye bread.
Take a mirror image of them, suddenly you get something which tastes of spearmint.
Huh.
It's what's put on Wrigley spearmint gum. And in fact, there are some very dramatic examples of this, not just where the taste changes, but listeners might remember a story about the thalidomide drug.
In 1958, a West German pharmaceutical firm began marketing a new drug.
This is a news spot from the early 1960s.
A sedative so effective and apparently harmless, it quickly became one of the most widely used and prescribed drugs in West Europe, thalidomide.
Before long, pregnant women started taking it as a way to calm morning sickness, and most of us, well, we know what happened next.
Every woman...
President Kennedy in a press conference.
In this country, I think, must be aware that it's most important that they do not take this drug, that they turn it in. Every citizen, of course, should be aware of the hazards.
All in all, sure, more than 12,000 children were born with arms and legs that were shortened or deformed or completely missing. The strange thing, according to Marcus, is that we now know that when they first made thalidomide, it was all one-handed. Let's say it was left-handed.
Yeah, and it did actually cure morning sickness.
And was completely harmless. But somewhere along the way, thalidomide flipped. We don't know whether this was in the drug-making process or after, but we do know.
Its mirror image was incredibly poisonous.
So you know what this means, Jad?
What?
That in a show about symmetry, what we've just discovered is that life itself is actually deeply asymmetric.
Yeah.
Unlike love, where we started the program back with Aristophanes, when it comes to life, you don't want to meet the other half.
Stay away, mirror milk, stay away. Anyhow.
Well, enough about mirrors.
No. I think we can take this another step further.
There is no further step
to take.
No, there
is. I mean, because something about this chemistry reflections thing resonates for me with the actual experience of standing in front of a mirror.
How?
Well, you know, you look at that guy and you're like, eh, oof. I mean, we talked about this on stage, actually, in D.C. at the Shakespeare Theater. Remember when I asked you that personal question?
Oh, yeah. Do we want to do that?
Oh, yes, we do. Psychologically, let me ask. Psychologically, do you enjoy looking in the mirror?
Is that a question you want to ask me in front of a... That's a private question, I feel.
Surely you know, though, that the difference between your true self and your mirror self is not trivial.
What do you mean by my true self? I don't know.
Well, I'm going to tell you the story now.
Okay.
About a guy named John Walter.
Oh, with the little mustache from Baltimore, from the movies. I think.
No, that's John Waters. Walter. He's a computer programmer in New Rochelle, paid him a visit recently. Because back when he was in college, he sort of kind of switched places with the guy in the mirror.
It was many years ago.
How old were you?
I was 19. So it was a long time ago.
We're talking late 70s here.
But I was had already had some issues with the mirror.
So let me set this up for you. The thing to know about John is that as a kid, he had a tough time, like so many of us. He would get bullied, beaten up on the playground. It was no better when he got into his teens. And as a 19-year-old, his social life consisted of a series of stinging humiliations like the following.
I remember at the time there was a lot of kids hanging out. You know, there was a crew of people, like, you know, 20, 30, 40 kids would gather together at the aqueduct, beautiful woods of the aqueduct, and go drink beers and smoke cigarettes, you know. I've walked into the group, like, hey, what's up? And it's like, yeah, whatever. Roundly rejected.
And that, according to John, was...
Normal. That was normal
for you.
Very normal. Like, people would say, what's that guy doing here? Yeah.
Maybe he was, like, wearing the wrong plaid pants or had, like, you know, mismatched socks. They might be some...
Whatever. Don't you empathize with this guy?
Nobody wants to be 19 and be the yucky person.
Exactly.
Of course I would empathize.
However, the story that will follow centers on a revelation that John had that began just as he was about to start his summer job.
For Con Ed, I was working for them.
As a painter.
And I had some pictures taken for Con Ed.
These were ID photos that you
got? Yeah, it was an ID camera that had four lenses. So when they took the negative, it was four of me. Boom, 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 boom.
Like little squares?
Little squares. And I remember looking over and going, why do I look so weird? Why do I look so weird?
Why do I look so weird? Because here's the thing. I mean, the John in the pictures was not the John that he knew himself to be. That John was kind of timid.
Nerdy.
Not cool.
Why do I look so weird in pictures? I look fine.
What do you mean you look fine? How do you know you look fine?
Well, I thought I looked fine in the mirror. You know, when I looked at myself.
Of course, in the mirror, things on the left go to the right, things on the right go to the left. Wait a second, that's when it hit him.
What hit him?
It's the hair part.
It's the what?
It's the hair part.
It's the what?
It's the hair part. I could do this all night. It's the hair part.
What does that mean? It's the hair. I hear it. I'm like, what does that mean? It's the hair part.
Well, in the picture, I saw a guy with a right hair part. In the mirror, I was seeing a guy with a left hair part.
Essentially, John...
Which side of my hair parted on?
You're left.
My left. Okay.
Now, John thought he was a lefty, too. He would stand in front of the mirror, and the mirror would tell him he was parting it to the left. But in fact, he was parting it to the right in real life. Now, the lefty guy in the mirror... He liked that guy.
I was fine with that guy. He was cool. There was nothing wrong with him.
But he realized he was the only person seeing that guy. So he thought,
oh, let me put my hair on the other side.
Let me essentially swap real me for mirror me.
It was one of these things where, yeah, that looks really weird in the mirror, but I bet you it looks good in real life. Let me go find out.
So what did you do?
Well, that night...
He goes... Back to the aqueduct, same posse is there as before.
I mean, that same group, interesting enough, had beat the crap out of me like 3 years earlier when I was in like ninth grade.
But there he was now with his hair parted on the left.
Oh,
he says,
no.
This time...
Things were different.
Somebody offered him a beer.
I was like, wow. But the thing that I knew made it better was when I left, I got goodbyes.
Come on. I look.
God, for the first time, I'm not.
This is ridiculous that you would tell me a story about a man who is having social failures universally, shifts his hair and is remade. This is like.
Look, it's his experience. It's very Vidal easy.
Vidal Sassoon wouldn't.
Easy to dismiss. But I'm going to win you
very
over.
Easy.
Are you ready? I'm going to win you over.
You're not.
You ready
good.
For this? I don't think you're ready. Are you ready?
If you are asking me to be broad-minded?
Because I'm going to show you a picture right now.
All right.
Okay. Have a look at...
Okay. At...
Who is that?
It's Abraham Lincoln.
Our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln.
Yes,
no, just
16th
stare at him,
president.
Robert. Take him in. Take him deep into your consciousness. By the way, this next part, you can see the picture is at radiolab.org. It's worth checking out.
All right.
His eyes, his nose, his mouth. Pay attention particularly to the hair part. Okay? Now, look what happens when you flip Abraham...
Oh, that.
You see what happens there?
No. Is this the same picture?
It's the same picture.
Go back to the other picture. Go.
All right. There's Abe.
Now do the other one.
Ooh. You see?
That's so weird.
Now, here's the thing. This is what Abraham Lincoln would have seen when he looked in the mirror. He would have seen this guy, not the other guy, the one we all see.
Huh.
So there's something going on here. Would you not at least acknowledge me that?
I find this vaguely plausible, yes.
Okay. With your permission, Mr. Cynic, I will now rejoin John.
Who's about to what?
Is it
get
okay?
married and have three babies because his hair
he
is...
He says after he switched his part...
It just kept getting better and better and better all summer long.
He was suddenly invited to all of these parties by the very same people that used to beat him up. And for the first time, he says...
I was clearly one of them.
Now, whether or not you buy that this is in fact because of his hair, that's on you, okay? But let's fast forward just a little bit.
The next summer...
This would have been 1979?
Yeah, 1979.
John's sitting in front of the TV and on comes...
Good evening. This is a special night for me.
The president.
Jimmy Carter.
Making a speech about how our nation is in a deep funk.
Why have we not been able to get together as a nation to resolve our serious energy problem?
The malaise speech, you know, that infamous country's in malaise.
It's clear that the true problems of our nation are much deeper, deeper than gasoline lines or energy shortages, deeper even than inflation or recession.
Now, as you know, I'm sure you remember, a lot of people would criticize Jimmy Carter for making the speech because he's up there admitting flaws, and they were like, come on, Mr. President, don't be weak, man up! John, meanwhile, is sitting in front of the TV, and he's thinking,
dude, you gotta change your hair part. And so I wrote him.
You wrote to him?
I wrote to him.
Wait, so you said... Why?
I think you should change your hair parted on the left. I did myself and found it to be much more powerful, much more successful. And
that letter?
I so wish I did.
Oh,
I don't have it. And then about 6 weeks later, boom, he switched.
He switched.
No, he
did. John wrote him a letter and President Carter switched.
No.
Now, it might not have been John's letter that did it.
You have no evidence.
Think about how much, what's involved in a president switching his hair. There are focus groups. There are prayer meetings. There's so much thought that goes into it.
Did anyone actually record this?
Yes.
They did?
I will now read you a journalistic account from periodical, there you go, Washington Post, right there. You see? Bam. Right there.
Oh, man.
Newsweek, May 7th, 1979. At first, photographers thought they had their negatives reversed. But no. Jimmy Carter has changed the part in his hair from the right side to the left. The Washington Press Corps demanded an explanation.
But remember that, you know, as opposed to John, who changes his hair and then all the girls give him beers, this guy, he was running against a luxuriantly haired man... Reagan, and it didn't matter.
Okay,
he got crushed.
All right, you know what? Forget
smart.
Forget
know?
The executive branch.
Yes.
Stay with me now.
Yes.
I was with John, and he was showing me pictures of congressmen and of celebrities, and I noticed something peeking out at the bottom of the pile.
I see peeking out underneath the stack of photos is a Superman.
Yeah.
He showed me a picture of Superman looking mighty in his Superman suit. Notice how he parts his hair.
Yeah, it's a little bit on there, on that side, yeah.
Now.
This is Clark Kent with it on the right.
And as we know from the movies, Clark Kent is
bumbling, sort of a dork.
Right. I was at first really nervous about tonight.
So somebody who made that movie maybe explicitly, intuitively understood something about the difference, that maybe, you know, the right part said one thing about Clark Kent, the left part said something about Superman. In fact, there is a scene in the movie where Clark Kent's running down an alley, he's about to turn into Superman, he pulls his shirt open to reveal the S, and literally mid-stride, his hair goes whoosh, and turns from the right to the left. So
you're saying that sophisticated popular cultural motion picture manufacturers and at least two presidents have been persuaded to this position.
At this very moment, on a Saturday night, that is what I'm saying.
All right. Well, for argument's sake, then, what would you say, I hate to get into this any deeper, explains the difference between putting the power of your hair on the left hand or the right hand?
Well, if you ask John, what he'll say is that the left hair part emphasizes strength and logic because it draws your attention to the logical, more masculine side of your face, your brain, because it's a left brain kind of thing, but I don't really know.
Okay.
So I decided I would actually take this seriously and figure out how to feel about it. So I called up this guy.
G'day, Jet. It's Mike.
His name is Mike Nichols.
Oh, from The Graduate is the Mike Nichols. Very good.
No, a psychology professor in Australia. An expert in symmetry.
That Mike Nichols.
Yes, that guy. Yeah. I ran him through John's theory. Have you ever seen the Superman movies?
Some of the earlier ones, I think.
You know how Clark Kent's hair is parted to the right, but then every time he turns into Superman, his hair...
So it ran him through the whole thing. You know, Clark's on the right, maybe he's weak, Superman's on the left, maybe he's stronger, more assertive.
Right.
Is there anything to that? Anything at all?
Yeah, I mean, possibly, you know... I'll have to...
But he did say this, which is interesting. In focusing on the left, John may be picking up on a particular bias that we human beings have to our left side. For instance, here's an experiment that he and his colleagues did.
Take a snapshot of someone's face at baseline when they're showing no emotion.
Blank face.
And then get them to try to look as happy or sad as they could.
Take happy guy and overlay him onto no expression guy.
And almost like a contour map, you could actually look at the amount of change, amount of muscle movement, and that it occurred.
What you will see, if you measure the muscle movement in millimeters on each side of the face, you'll see that the smile curves a few extra millimeters on the left side of the face. He says this is nearly always the case, always on the left side.
What it's really telling you is that when somebody smiles or when they frown or whatever, they're doing it slightly more strongly on the left side of their face.
Now, if this is the case, that our left side is sort of saying more emotionally than our right side, then if you think about the mirror, it's kind of a discombobulating thing, you know, because it's taking your left, which is sort of broadcasting emotion, flipping it to your right, you're seeing yourself, you're all mixed up. You don't know which part of you is where.
You're saying, like, because I tend to address you with my attention on your left side, unbeknownst to me, and your left side is actually flipped over to your right side, it's a where are we sort of question.
Exactly. Yeah. But John has developed a solution to this problem.
Let me take this one apart.
He now makes and sells his own very special mirrors right out of his home. And is this where you make the mirrors?
Yeah. Everything goes into the mirror is made here. You see here, this is the machine that cuts the mirror.
He buys these giant sheets of reflective glass, and he slices them into little pieces.
Clunk. And then I snap it.
Now, for each mirror, this is the key, he uses two pieces of mirror glass instead of one. What he'll do is he'll take these two pieces and he'll place them together at right angles.
Two mirrors at right angles.
Like exactly at right angles.
It has to be 90.00 degrees. And let's just push this up a little bit. That's still not enough.
And because when he finally gets it right, which can take hours, what he'll have is this V-shaped mirror. He'll stand it up, put it in a box, and then voila, what you have is a mirror that shows you a mirror image of a mirror image of you. Takes the normally flipped guy that you'd see in the mirror, re-flips him, so that what you are seeing is essentially, well, for the first time in a mirror, you see yourself as other people see you.
Okay, so there you go.
So what is this that you have in your hand?
This is a true mirror. This is the 12-inch model. And so when you like
touch... So this is actually what I look like?
Yeah, touch your right eye. See, it's actually on the right side.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy. It is surprisingly weird to see yourself this way. I feel like my nose is going the wrong way.
Yeah.
I never knew my nose went that way. And this little flare in my eyebrows
is on the wrong side. Or the right side, as it were. John claims that many a fair number, I probably would put you in this bunch, my co-host, when they stand in front of this mirror, they...
freak out, many of them, because they, it's just their perception is shaken up a little bit.
In fact, he sometimes takes his mirrors to these festivals and will sort of set them up and have people look at themselves and then fill out comment cards afterwards.
You know, I mean, if you look at some of the comments, you know, it's like...
This person thinks they're a monster.
I am a monster in your mirror.
what did he say? I am a
monster in your mirror. To break we go.
Yep.
If you want any more information on anything you heard, go to our website, radiolab.org.
Or if you want to see those incredible pictures of Abe Lincoln, that's where they are.
Yeah, that's right. And subscribe to our podcast there as well.
This is the credits read by Marcelo Gleiser.
Hi, this is John Walter calling.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and...
This is Marcus DeSotoy. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world.
More information at macfound.org.
And the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation.
Supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, prevention of child abuse.
This is NPR.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.